I will call the meeting to order. It's 7:03 PM. This is the Thursday, September 9th, 2021 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. And this meeting is taking place telephonically and in person at Village Hall under the governor's orders for COVID-19 and the allowances under the Open Meetings Act. Calling the roll, Chair Franek.
Here.
Commissioner Sager.
Here.
Commissioner Graham White.
Here.
Commissioner Krasinski.
Here.
Commissioner Schwartz.
Here.
Commissioner Forehand.
Here.
Commissioner Raina Ogden.
Here.
We have all the members in a quorum. And Chair Franek, there is nobody here in Village Hall to offer any public comment or on the line. And I did not receive any in advance in writing.
Great. Thanks, John. First off, I would like to thank everyone for taking the time out to do an earlier special meeting so all of us can weigh in on the topic that we're discussing tonight. And with that, I would like to know whether anyone has any comments as to the meeting minutes for our last meeting of August 26th. And what I will do, and please forgive me, but because we're not all in the same room, so that exponentially increases the possibility of us trying to speak over each other, I'm just going to kind of go down the list, kind of taking back to your days in school, sorry, and just ask people if they have any comments. Carla?
No comments.
Jan?
Nope.
David?
None.
John Forehand?
Is your mic on?
No comments. No comments.
Okay. Scott?
No.
And John Schwartz?
No.
Great. So do I hear a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I second.
John, do you want to take the roll?
Commissioner Sager?
Yeah.
Commissioner Graham White?
Yes.
Commissioner Krasinski?
Yes.
Commissioner Schwartz?
Yes.
Commissioner Forehand?
Yes.
Commissioner Raina Ogden?
Yes.
Chair Franek?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. So, moving on, additional ways to protect significant properties. Our special meeting tonight is kind of an outgrowth of discussions we had at our last meeting. And it arises from the concerns that have been kind of highlighted by not only the changing use after the sale of a car dealership in Oak Park into a grocery store to be developed, but also some of the discussions attendant to a possible sale of the Priory campus at Dominican. And really what the concern would be is that one of the big concepts of historic preservation is adaptive reuse. Now, when the ordinance was adopted, we had a maximum of a six-month delay in the event that a significant property owner, the owner of a significant property, sought a demolition permit. The idea being that would give us enough of an opportunity to explore other avenues for another purchaser. The 6 months is really tied for the same use, namely residential. But in other instances, we have a number of properties in the village which are not residential. So to that end, I had asked John to provide a list, which has been circulated to everyone as part of your packets, of all those properties which are not zoned for single family residential. And I'd like to further shrink that focus into all of those properties which are not residential in any manner. And that still basically leaves what's called a PRI zoning. John, if you could take a moment and describe for the commissioners what is entailed in a PRI zone.
Yep. So you see a bunch of the properties here as great examples, but it's public, recreational, institutional. So your government buildings, your schools, your parks, all your kind of primary non-tax paying property. You know, not too much else to add to that, but obviously you see here a lot of these buildings are made up of those types of, you know, the taxing bodies, the universities, you know, institution obviously lends itself to all the religious structures and churches, things like that.
To that end, in the event that someone decided, and let's talk just in generalities, anytime someone looks to purchase a larger property and they contemplate a potential multiple use or change in use, that involves a number of permits. It also involves some extensive conversations with financial institutions as to financings. It also involves a number of other considerations as to, can we lease some portion of the property to someone else for use consistent with what we wish to do with the property. This is much more involved, much more complicated than the 6-month potential maximum delay from the time someone files an application for demolition and demolition can take place. So the thought that I had is that we should have a meeting of as many commissioners as possible, and thankfully everyone is here, to discuss the concept of what we wish to do. Do we wish to extend the 6 months? Do we wish to do something else for these public, recreational, and institutional properties? And to that end, that's sort of my little preface. And let me do this again. Let me sort of just go down the list. And people can have as much time as they wish, and they can jump in later. But just so that everyone doesn't try to talk over everyone else, we're not in the same room. Let's start with Carla. Thoughts?
My first thought going down this list was seeing the former Lutheran Child and Family Services, which I believe the village bought and intends to demolish. And my question is, do we have any say over the village in terms of their right to demolish without bringing it to the commission?
Well, yes, I can touch on that a little bit. I mean, Carla, as you might remember, we did bring an application forward for that about six, maybe it's almost a year ago
now. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so certainly it would go through the same process.
Okay.
As anything else, you are right that the commission's decisions, all of the commission's decisions are appealable to the Village Board of Trustees. So certainly, you know, they could kind of hear that application too. But I also think that, you know, in my preparation of this list, I kind of took it as the liberal understanding of the non-single family homes. And that's why I included the few that are in C2, C3, and at the bottom, the R4, the multifamily. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's actually what Chair Franek intended. I think he may have just intended the PRI, so that's my mistake, if so.
Okay, I was just wondering about that. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, that's my comment. Dave.
Jan?
So I understand that the PRIs would not be, you mentioned something about adaptive reuse, that would not apply or?
No, it would. I mean, kind of the genesis of the whole idea is when you have larger properties, it is not uncommon in the development world that over time, particularly with historic properties, the use may change, or it may become multiple different uses with the same structure as parts of it are partitioned off into separate units. So as a result, that becomes much more complicated, because in order to do that, someone who would wish to purchase the property would then have, rather than a negotiation, who has a contract to purchase a single family residence and wants to demolish that home and build something else, they would have the obligation to then their own negotiated agreement with a whole series of people. Because of that much greater potential for a much larger number of parties at the table to see through a potential purchaser's vision, 6 months is really far too short a period of time, I think, in order to accomplish that meaningfully. And what we want to do is we want to have a meaningful opportunity to ensure that we've done what we can to save these structures before they are lost, and that various market forces, including potential multiple uses of a given location, are explored.
Another thought is, I think we saw that with the 6 month delay, by the time we have the hearing within the 60 days, but not less than 30 days, the developer, he's not ready anyway. So I don't know that I personally would like to see us extend that timeline. And I'm not sure about how people feel about that 30-day, what is it? We have, here it is. Looking at the flow chart, you know, I think that's too tight. You know, I think we should review the ordinance and see what we think we can extend this to. But that's my opinion. I'd like to see maybe a year, although maybe for a planned development, which this probably would be, I mean, they'd probably say fine. The year might not affect them, but at least we're not hurrying up for a whole lot of nothing, I guess. That's just my thoughts right now.
Yeah, I agree with Jan that it should be a longer period of time. In fact, I think when we were changing from, what was it, 90 day to the 6 months, I really thought that it should have been a longer period of time, at least 9 months for residential, which is what we were changing, and preferably a year. I would have no problems with extending it, certainly for these PRI.
David?
I agree. I think it'd be longer for both, but the big difference that we can use to argue this is that to find a alternative use for a commercial building is a wonderful process and may take a little longer. And there's an alternative use for a house, you know, something you live in or you don't. So an adaptive reuse of a building is a much more welcome thing, but a bit of a longer process, I would think, to let that happen.
John Forehand.
I
thinking out loud about this. I thinking back to the funeral home in Oak Park where they just had the, you know, Focus Development came in and they're going to be building.
Put a little closer to you. I think that would
help. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Can you hear me? I was thinking about Focus Development in Oak Park when they came in and, you know, they were looking at the funeral home and now they're going to be putting in some housing there, and just thinking in terms of how long that process took. So I certainly don't see any issue with extending it. And obviously we'd have the ability to not use the full year, but at least we have something to fall back on. That was also just another thought I had when you talk about there's when you're doing a big project that people want to slow down a little bit, there's, you know, you often hear about the environmental impact statement that's required on, you know, big pipelines and things like that. Has anyone ever done, you know, could you require something like a historical study on a particular piece of property if a developer came in and wanted to, you know, change Willard School to something, you know, have something in the process that would require a developer to really study the history of the building? And that's just sort of a sidebar, but I do agree that some extra time would be appropriate.
And in terms of requiring a developer or an owner to do kind of a historical or architectural impact statement, don't we already have one of those with a survey in terms of gleaning how old it is, what the significant features are, whether a historical personages was involved, who the architect was, if we know it? Would you want something more than that?
You know, I'd have to take a look at that. If is it fairly robust, or is it, you know, maybe it's something I could take a look at and see. But, you know, if we're presenting this to the public, you think you'd definitely want to show the public what the historical value of the property is before you recommend making a change. So, but I'll take a look at that.
At the time we did the survey, we commissioned an architectural firm as well as a single architect. Both happened to be in Oak Park, but we put an RFP out nationally and, in fact, got responses and interviewed someone from well out of the region, I believe from Tennessee. And what they did is they came up with a two-page survey report form that is available online for each of the formerly 298 significant properties, now sadly down to 296, that lists all the properties and the information that we were able to glean, or the architectural firms were able to glean in the survey. So, Scott, thoughts?
I've never been beyond the chapel in that building at the Priory. In the second floor, are there residences for the Dominican priests? And could a developer claim that there has been a long time residential use because of the priests?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not familiar with that property in particular. I would say, though, I think that I'm just not familiar with that property. So I couldn't speak to what the use of it is.
Yeah. It's not currently zoned for that. And that's how I try to make that distinction.
Well, the other thing I'd like to mention is I didn't hear anything about when you go back and look over the history about the Native American Indians. Does somebody have to provide a study for that? because that's going to take a long time right there.
Currently, that's not part of the village's plan development process or the historic preservation process, so no.
That's all I got.
Okay. John Schwartz?
I have a couple of items I've jotted down, so forgive me, I'll try to go quickly. But at the very beginning of your comments, Dave, you mentioned something about Oak Park and a car dealership. Uh-huh. I don't know if I remembered what that situation was.
Yeah, along Madison Street, there was, I believe it was several luxury car dealerships, including, I believe, a Cadillac dealership that was purchased by the village a number of years ago and was subsequently torn down, and a Pete's Fresh Market has been approved for construction there. One of the things that preservationists were concerned about is there were a number of, I don't know if you'd call them grotesques or gargoyles, on the outside that were around the banding above the first floor that basically were caricatures of various mechanics. The property was built, you know, close to 100 years ago or more than 100 years ago. And as such, people were very concerned that a structure, at least the shell, was pretty noteworthy, and could this in fact be saved? I believe ultimately at the end of the day, some of those were saved, whether or not they are made of the facade of the new supermarket, I think remains ultimately to be seen.
Okay.
Caused a whole lot of concern in the preservation community, both in Oak Park and as a sideline also in River Forest. But I'm just kind of using that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
John Forehand mentioned the funeral home in Oak Park, that when you look at something, you're going with, rather than just, okay, do we have another residential buyer? These things take time. It rapidly expands. And if in fact we thought that 6 months on a residence is pretty, you know, that's basically fairly minimalist, then if we're talking about something that's a much larger property that would potentially have a number of people looking at potentially different uses, that would be a vastly more complicated development process and would far blow past the 6 month window.
Okay, thank you. That helps. My next question is probably pretty easy, but when were all the PRI items, I guess everything C2, C3, PRI, R4, were they all added at the same time? Did everything get categorized when that report with the 298 significant properties was developed, or have they been added through the years?
I think they're all originals as part of the original survey. And we're not, for purposes of the discussion, we're really only talking the PRI.
Right.
Opposed to the C2, C3, and R4s.
Okay. So it's not like the St. Luke's was added in 2019 and
correct.
The other one was in 1982. Okay.
Correct.
And so when was this study? You've mentioned it a couple of times. I can't remember what year.
2013.
Okay.
Yeah, at the time the commission was formed, we really had a couple of charges, one of which, and they both stem from the idea of protecting the architectural heritage and the built environment here in our village. We really had two ways to do that specifically. The first of which was to commission a survey of all the properties in the village to determine which properties met certain criteria. The criteria were I believe it was 8 criteria established by the Secretary of the Interior in the National Historic Preservation Act, which goes back to, I think it's 1964, 1965, maybe 65. And those are kind of like the common yardstick that's used in preservation all across the country. So what we did is we put out a request for proposal say, this is what we want, get back to us. And we had a number of responses from across the country. And we brought in three firms to do presentations. We happened to pick someone who was local because we thought their presentation was much more concise and something that we were, you know, particularly interested with the fact that they had mentioned developing a survey that we could then add to in the future as more information about certain properties came to light, because property owners came up with some information that we were subsequently able to vet and then make changes to the survey. So okay. The other thing is just public education.
Okay. But
the survey is sort of, that's kind of where we started to say, okay, this is really what we're talking about. These are the things that are either architecturally significant based upon these eight factors, or they're associated with a historic individual who's got, you know, more than just village interest, that has regional or national interest. And in fact, those were added as well.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry for the lengthy explanation.
No, that helps. And I apologize to the group if some of the questions I'm asking is common knowledge to the rest of the group. It'll take me a while to get up to speed, I think. But when the commission can issue the, or when it does issue the 6-month hold, for example, would there be something that would trigger the hold or not trigger the hold? If someone bought if a developer bought a house, or someone bought a house and they didn't want to tear it down, they just wanted to add a porch, could that trigger the 6-month hold? Well, or is it just if it's demolished completely?
The 6 months refers to a request for a certificate of appropriateness for demolition only.
Okay.
We would get presentations, and we will from time to time, of owners and developers who say, look, I've got, you know, my client has this property. They want to make the following change.
Mm-hmm.
What triggers it is if a change is being sought for more than 20% of the facade of a structure that's viewable from a public street. Easiest way to describe it.
Okay.
And when that happens, that triggers our review. We can say yes or no. If we say no, they can still go ahead, but try to guide them in ways that would suggest this may be more historically accurate, which may in fact increase the value of your property. Or in the past, we have been fortunate to always have multiple architects who are members of the commission. And on many instances, there have been public meetings where one of the architects has sketched something out while a person's doing a presentation, handed it to the representative and said, have you thought about doing this? Accurate. This will save you some money. The response we frequently have is, gee, I wish I knew this before I got a basement full of windows that I've already committed to. So yeah, that's there are multiple tasks that we perform. The 6 month though is the maximum period we have, and that's from the time that the village considers that it has received all the information required to seek a demolition permit of a significant property until that expires. So that's what the maximum 6 months is. Sometimes we've extended for 6 months. Sometimes we've done a shorter period as well.
Okay.
Because of circumstances.
That helps. Thank you. My next question was about there have been a couple comments about potentially allowing for a year or extending that 6 months to a longer period of time, especially when you're talking about more complex properties. Are there historic preservation statutes in other villages, cities, states that could serve as a guide? Oak Park, I know, has a more robust series of protections for properties. Is there anything else that could be a guide for River Forest?
I think we looked at many, many different villages, and they had the amount of time varied from like 30 days to a couple of years. And, you know, we looked mostly in Illinois and the Midwest, but yeah, a variety of timelines. So, and I think the 6 months seemed to be probably the one that was the easiest to institute.
Okay, thanks.
And the most logical one at that point.
And if the commission is, oh, sorry, I think I
was just going to add it. I think that Carla's right. They're certainly, they vary, right? I mean, there's many municipalities mm-hmm. that have none at all, and there's some municipalities that have, you know, enough teeth, if you will, to say no, never, right? So it really does run the gamut of the local appetite for, you know, striking a balance there between property owner rights and historic preservation.
Yeah, I think it's probably fairly safe to say that River Forest is somewhere in the middle. There are some communities that basically have very few protections.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, Oak Park is a good example, that have very stringent protections. And where we came down as a commission, what was approved by the Board of Trustees was something fairly in the middle of where a lot of our peer villages came out. And as both Carla and John had mentioned, at the time the ordinance was revised, we looked at ordinances for a number of jurisdictions from all over the country to get a sense what municipalities did, how they did it, what they considered important, and what the timeframes were. The criteria that were used to determine whether a property is significant and hence worthy of protection, the eight categories, the eight indicia, those are things that are pretty much universal. Everybody uses those as the defining bright line. These are the kinds of things we look at to determine whether something has significance. So in that instance, everybody pretty much across the board goes with those.
Okay. Well, and I guess maybe I'd ask this question and we can talk about it at another meeting, but I mean, is there appetite either in this group or at the board level to expand the tools the commission has to work with other than for the PRI properties? And if so, maybe that's something the group puts on its agenda. And if not, I understand. But I, as somebody kind of new to the group, I both am interested in the history of the development of this and then where maybe it goes from here. And then my last comment, I think, is about the historic impact statement that John mentioned and you explained a little bit too, Dave. But I suppose this is more a comment, but it of the 296 properties on that survey, I want to be respectful of all of them, but I think it's probably pretty clear that some of them are different in levels of importance to the village than are others. And for example, the fact that the Winslow House has the same level of protection as does kind of a random house on another street, no offense to that other house, I think the community would be significantly worse off if a developer came in and demolished the Winslow House than it would be one of those others. And so I wonder if there's some sort of grading system that could be or should be used for certain properties to add even more protections when something rises above the level of normal. And that's my comment.
That's a good point that you raised, John. And the ordinance currently provides that owners can voluntarily seek landmark status. And you're absolutely correct. There are certain properties in the village, and we could probably go around the table metaphorically, and people could say, yep, this, and we could probably come up with a set number that everyone would agree on at a significantly higher level. And there is no question that the Winslow House is truly iconic. And it is something that is one of Wright's most significant designs anywhere. And as such, the fact that it's here in our village is extraordinary. There is no question that were someone to seek something that would significantly alter, as in demolish that property, that the outcry both in our community, in the region, in the state, and nationally and internationally would be pretty vociferous, because it really is just among a true handful of Wright designs that really guided what he was doing. But the means for doing that would be for a homeowner to voluntarily landmark, and that would then give us certain rights to say no, to deny certain requests.
But that, sure, my day-to-day job is at least partly risk management, I'd hate to see something like that happen and be reactive rather than proactive, especially with those incredibly important properties. If there's a tool in the, or if there's an arrow in the quiver that could stop that from happening before it ever happened or before it ever came about, I'd love to investigate it, though I'm not proposing anything now.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happens is because we are adjacent to Oak Park, which self-identifies with preservation and has so many extraordinary properties, and we have so many extraordinary properties, and Riverside has so many extraordinary properties. I think what happens is people kind of are inured to it, and they don't truly appreciate how exceptional the offerings are in each of those three villages individually and collectively. I mean, it really is remarkable on a national level. And I don't think people who grew up here or live here really fully appreciate the extent of the importance of some of these structures. And again, that's part of, task number two, which is public education, and something that we always look for input on from various commissioners as to, think out of the box and how can we tell this story to the community as a whole.
One thing to chime in there, there are a couple properties that have protections outside of the commission's purview, right? So the Women's Club has been an example we've talked about here that has protections, deed restriction protections from previous owners. Chair Franek, is it the Illinois Historic Preservation, I don't remember what that body is called, that they set up those deed restrictions with? Do you guys?
Yeah, it's Landmarks
Illinois. Landmarks Illinois, thank you. Couldn't come up with that. And, and then the Winslow House is also on the National Register. I'm not totally sure all of what restrictions come with that off the top of my head. But, in other words, there's some properties that just already from deed restrictions or other designations have other protections against them.
Yeah, as an example, John Schwartz, to expand upon what John Pape just said, the River Forest Women's Club has internal deed restrictions and preservation easements in favor of Landmarks Illinois on both the inside and the outside of the property, of the structure, that are quite stringent. So, I mean, there are a number of ways that people can seek to ensure that their buildings, as best as is possible, maintain their current stature.
Thanks, everyone. And thanks for letting me take too much time. I appreciate it.
No such thing as too much time. The idea is to get everybody's thoughts out and to You know, the only restrictions are germane and obviously we're respectful of each other and all members in the community. But other than that, the idea is to have that robust discussion. And whether it's something that any one of us is in agreement with others or the majority, or whether they're disagreement with others, the majority, as long as we're civil, that's fine. You know, let's just, you know, fully express it.
Thanks.
I have a couple thoughts.
Please.
Okay, there are some communities will have a salvage requirement in their ordinance, and it's a may, not a shall. So it would be up to the Preservation Commission to, they may ask for a salvage, approved salvage company to look at the property. I don't know. And so rather than, so that would mean each property would kind of stand on its own merits. So for instance, when the Mars Mansion came down, and of course we didn't have anything, you know, we didn't even have the delay, but that developer wouldn't even come to the village to the meetings. But our historical society went over and talked to the developer's representative. Jan Dressel was part of that. And because the owner still lived there, there were some beautiful architectural elements inside. And I think outside too, weren't there some copper stuff, you know, but inside beautiful wood. And so she asked about salvage. And so the representative said he'd get back to her, and I think it was the next day the house came down, or maybe a day later. But it was it was a total fluff off. And so that's where that's a specific case. Now, at 1123 Franklin, that house was gutted. There were some outside elements that would have been nice to get, and we never had a shot at that either. We tried, but the developer fluffed off various people around town who wanted some things that were on the porch, the balustrades, and they just kind of ignored them. So that would be on a case by case basis. So that's one thing. The other thing, huh?
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing. Some way of getting the salvage before it's just carted off. And the other thing that I've seen in some of the ordinances is an ability for, the commission to have a photographer go in. I know the commission has to do only with the exterior, but to do photography, particularly of elements in the inside. And I know the Mars Mansion had some incredible hardware that had been installed there, but nobody was ever able to get that out. I guess even the grandchildren who wanted to go in and get that out, at least to be able to photograph, memorialize what is inside. And hopefully, it's not going to be demolished, but we've had, enough demolitions where that would have been at least helpful for the historical records. So go ahead, Jan, about what the other thing you had.
Yeah, so then the other thing is, on this delay, if we're talking about possibly extending, and now it's, I think with the ordinance that was adopted back in 2016, I wasn't on the commission, but I think a lot of the thought was more toward the homes, the residences.
Mm-hmm.
And now it looks like we're talking a lot about the PRIs and, the list that John gave us. So is do we want to start thinking about separating and saying, okay, for the on this list, the PRI, the C2, C3, R4, we would look at maybe the longer period of time on the demolition request, the longer delay? Or would we want to, again, just have all our properties delayed? So,
Because I think, Dave, thoughts.
Dave Franek, I got the impression that you really wanted to look at these PRI, these not residences.
I do. A couple of thoughts in sequence. The first, in terms of salvage, at the Bard Mansion, as chair at the time, I was contacted by two of the grandchildren who the original owner of the property had was the owner of a plumbing and lighting company in Chicago. And he had a number of fixtures initially that were installed in the residence, and the grandchildren wanted to take out one as a family memento. I do not know to what extent those were still in there, and I don't think the grandchildren knew either. In terms of the salvage, I think two things go into play. The first is the perception that an owner will respond with some element, a mixture of goodwill and also self-interest. What was probably quite noticeable when the Mars Mansion was demolished, literally as soon as they got the permit, is that structure had what are known as inset gutters. Inset gutters are an enclosed gutter system that protrudes from the main exterior walls of a building. And they're basically pans that will collect rainwater and meltwater into various downspouts and other means of getting the water off the roof. One of the granddaughters told me that her grandfather had specified that the copper in the inset gutters at the Mars Mansion be structurally sound enough to support the weight of two workmen standing in them at one time. So given the value of copper as a salvage material, the owners shot themselves in the foot economically by at a minimum not salvaging the copper that was when that property was demolished. That is just someone who did not have an appreciation for what was there. Secondly, in terms of extending the timeframes, I think Jan and Carla are right that the initial thoughts when the ordinance was under discussion was single family residences and their protection. And they tend to be a very large percentage of the significant properties. There are, however, other non-residential properties as shown on this, they all happen to be PRI. And I would make a distinction between properties that are zoned for non-residential as opposed to those that are zoned for residential use. If it's zoned for residential use, it probably already, you can tell that it's going, if it's gonna be sold, it's gonna be sold as a residence. Or in the alternative, a number of multiple uses have already been explored. With some of these other structures, you're looking at something that could have any number of different factors and would have people potentially interested for the whole panoply of different uses. That's why I kind of like to focus, you know, what we're talking about, at least now, on the PRI stuff. Because I think that's an a much simpler presentation. I think it's a consistent presentation. And I think it's something that is possibly an easier and more easily attainable result because, again, it's based upon the concept of adaptive reuse. And one of the things that even people who aren't preservationists understand is if you have a building, you can always change the use of that building, and maybe the use of that building will a lot, will give it a second or a third life into the future, but that takes time and it would far outstrip the 6 months. It's my thoughts.
Chair Franek, if I may, I just want to interject with some people that might not know all of the process, and I think it'd be a good time to mention a couple of things. So code changes are approved by the Village Board of Trustees, and in this case, it would be, you know, choosing to hear and then, you know, accept or deny a recommendation from the Historic Preservation Commission on a code change, an ordinance change to the Historic Preservation Code. It does not require a public hearing, but traditionally what happens is that the recommending body, in this case the Historic Preservation Commission, would go about kind of vetting out that change, vetting out the recommendation, getting on the same page. You know, in this case, you know, could the commission potentially reach a consensus, you know, a 7-0 consensus on making that recommendation, and then also give an opportunity to have a public meeting, notify affected properties, accept some comment, do some of those things so that when the commission takes that recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees, you can show the board the due diligence you've done to support your recommendation and they can have all the information. You know, we you know, notified the public and we held a meeting and this is the type of feedback we got back, you know, good, bad, or indifferent feedback that we got that they can kind of have a complete picture, you know. So again, there's not necessarily a set process, but, you know, in the past, the Historic Preservation Commission's, you know, done this to propose ordinance changes. And I think that it would be wise to follow that same process of, again, holding, you know, reaching a consensus among this group on what the proposed change is, holding a public meeting, you know, with plenty of notice through village communications channels and maybe a letter to the affected properties about the change and hearing any feedback that they might have about it, and then putting that all together in a recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees. That's typically, and I think, the appropriate, you know, avenue for that. For that reason, too, I think it's wise to choose a proposed change that has one audience, and that would be my concern about you know, anything that impacts all the properties. While this was just impacting some of the properties, you start to blend some audiences, and I think probably end up inadvertently just creating some confusion for, you know, for people.
I think that that's a good statement, John. Just knowing how difficult it was just to get the 6 months extension and that change. And even that, people still didn't even understand that. And that brought out a lot of problems, I think, with all those all the properties. And I think dividing it into the PRIs and these commercials as well, it's a good idea. So I think it will be less, I'm not quite sure what the word I want to use right now, less frightening to a lot of people in the village.
And that reason, again, Carlos, because it's an adaptive reuse, is a process, and that needs more than 6 months, and it's just a great process to find a way to reuse a building rather than to tear it down. And that's our calling card. I think we're getting the 12 months versus the 6 months of residential.
Yeah, good, yeah.
Other thoughts? John, forehand.
I don't want to take us on too much of a tangent here, but as you guys were talking about salvage, I keep thinking about the historical American Building Survey, which I think a lot of you are familiar with. But, you know, that basically you have these great historical buildings that have been documented with architectural drawings. I wonder if that's something that we could add in as a requirement if something was to be demolished, you know, to have the building documented before its demolition. Nowadays, you know, maybe it's already done, but nowadays you can basically scan the entire building and, you know, it's a lot simpler process than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great to have, you know, a scan of the Mars residence that for history purposes?
The code mm-hmm. requires when you submit an application for a certificate of appropriateness for demolition that you include architectural elevations of the exterior. Now, in the past, the commission has waived that requirement in lieu of photographs, but that's not precedent setting. We could do whatever we like. You know, in the case of 747 William, you know, architectural elevations were prepared. You know, again, they're simple elevations, but and just the exterior, but those were prepared. So just to kind of lend what's there right now.
Okay. The technology has changed so much nowadays that, you know, you literally go in there with these big scanners and you can get down to the quarter inch of what's there. It's amazing. So that would be an amazing thing to have as an archive for the village, too.
I do have a thought, though, since our purview is the exterior, and I know I went out there and, you know, talked about the interior of the Mars Mansion. Are we then limited to just say, you know, well, I guess we should think about not overstepping our bounds, or maybe we start lobbying the Historical Society or some other outside groups when it comes to the interiors.
Yeah, when it comes
so
to...
do we stick to the exterior, you know, do we just...
When it comes to making the decision, you're right that the purview is really about the exterior. However, you know, again, as part of that, you know, say there's a property that comes up, there's a demolition delay that's put in place. You know, the property owner has to provide some, you know, reasonable cooperation with, you know, with what's going on. I don't know that we could necessarily require them to, but if the commission, the village decided that we wanted to request some access to document what was there, I think that that's reasonable. You know, perhaps, you know, the attorney would opine that it's really got to be at our cost, and rather than putting that burden on them, but in terms of like access to the property to do that, I think that that's a reasonable request.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we've had instances. I can think of two demolitions. Probably the last two that we've had. In one instance, the property owner was more than willing, along with the property owner, it was the developer and a representative, to go through the home with members of the commission at a set time to view, and the property owner could then explain what they saw as issues that they felt necessitated a demolition. In another instance, the property owner effectively told us they were not willing to do that. They used insurance as the reason for that. Although when it was pointed out to them that because we would be acting on behalf of the village, we would be covered as commissioners by village's insurance, they still refused the opportunity to have us look at the interior. Our purview is really only as to the exterior, and as someone who spent a lot of time looking at a lot of ordinances all over the country at the time we did this, I cannot recall any ordinance that gave a preservation commission rights as to what someone does on the interior of a property. It may be voluntary. It may be because it's a landmark, but in terms of a rubric of a quote unquote significant property, however that's defined, and various jurisdictions call it something else, but for purposes, it's what we would call a significant property. I don't recall anyone that gave a commission to say so on the interior. Any further thoughts? Scott, do you have any thoughts?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone else have any thoughts they want to discuss as part of the process?
Let's just add the interior does come into play for the historic tax freeze, and that's the only time it does.
Yeah.
Not if someone really dislikes Dave's couch.
Correct. And if someone's not crazy about my ceiling fan, you know, such is life. So I guess, folks, what do we want to do? Do we want to proceed with a general sense that we should do something? If so, are we going to focus at this point on the PRI properties? Do people want to do something else beyond that? Do we have a general sense that we can proceed from? Or do we continue to discuss?
Dave, I think we proceed with some lawyerese writing from you about getting in front of the village board to get a 1 year extension on commercial PRI projects.
I appreciate your confidence in my professional skills from past life, and as others have said, once a lawyer, always a lawyer, retired or not. I would leave that in the hands of the village attorney.
Sounds good.
But personally, I'm in favor of expanding the potential demolition protection for PRI properties from 6 to 12 months because of the length of time that would be involved because of the nature of the property. And as to those other zoning classifications, which are residential, I would leave them at this point where they are at the 6 months. Because I think we want to look at things as current focus, as opposed to spreading an even wider net.
So a question on that. Again, a couple of comments have been made about other ordinances across the country. Do those other ordinances divide property classifications like this? Is there anything similar out there that is used that we could use as a model? Or kind of is this group creating that? Not that that's bad. I'm wondering if other groups have done this.
Sure. I've had some preliminary conversations with the village attorney, and he believes that we would be on firm ground looking to look at expanding potentially the length of a demolition delay for the PRI properties. Again, because of the adaptive reuse concepts. But I don't want to speak for him, and I would certainly look to his guidance as to how we would do it in terms of our proposal. First, to state something for purposes of getting public comment. And secondly, depending upon the public comment, a subsequent presentation to the village board.
That the next steps we go to the attorney's
picture. Yeah, I would certainly have him provide some advice, you know, advice on this and get his opinion. But I do think that if I understand the consensus correctly, and I think that's where Chair Franek's going, I think it's pretty narrow in terms of code language, right? You know, the code says something, and I don't have it in front of me, but something along the lines of, you know, it shall be no longer than 6 months from the date of the application, and this would just be, except for property zoned PRI, which shall be 12 months, you know, or up to 12 months. It's a pretty narrow language change. The process stays the same. The application stays the same. The appeals stay the same. You know, unless I'm hearing otherwise, it's not terribly, you know, complicated language.
Yeah, I think that's the case. My only question, John, would be to the extent that any of the appeal language runs from the initial application, but I don't think so. I think all the appeal language runs from decisions.
I think so. I think you're right.
But as long as that's the case, I think you're right. I think it would be fairly narrow.
And again, unless I'm hearing otherwise, the whole application process, the hearing procedures, all that would stay the same. We would definitely, get some advice and counsel on that for sure. Again, why reaching a consensus is important is because the next step of having the public meeting, we just want to be clear. And we don't need a vote, but the consensus is important because what we don't want to do is go, first of all, we can't tell people to comment on something that they don't know what it is. So we want to be clear in that sense. But we also don't want to go get public comment and then the commission changes its direction, because then we're kind of going, we would need to go back to public comment at that stage. So that's why having this meeting is important, to get everybody's buy-in and obviously, you know, consensus on it.
Just one thing on the PRIs that, you know, I did notice on some of these zoning classes, though. I mean, we're going to be leaving out the Drummond building, which is a C3. And we're going to be leaving out the oldest commercial building in town at Lake and Thatcher, the first one on the list. And the building at the southeast corner of Lake and Ashland, that's a C3, and 7623 to 7629 Lake Street. And I understand that, I think the second story, some of that was a Drummond remodel. Is that true from the survey? But so do we still want to leave? Do we still want to focus on the PRIs? I mean, I'm just kind of red flagging some of the buildings like the Drummond building.
I think my preference would be to keep in all the C2s and the C3s, but not the R4s.
I agree with that.
Because I think in terms of adaptive reuse, I think those would be, you know, buildings that, particularly the bank buildings, that could definitely be, you know, converted into something else rather than demolished. I'm thinking about that, the big bank building there. And they're not that many. They're what, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm leaving out the Lutheran Child and Family Services. So it's only a matter of four buildings there.
But that can be conditioned. I know that the commission before has offered a condition. You know, if the developer does this, then we will shorten the demo delay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't mean that it has to be a year. Up to a year.
That the village owns.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's only five buildings there. that would, you know, be added to the PRIs, which would seem reasonable. Or just be the non-residential buildings, or would not include any residential buildings.
Yeah, just to be clear, there are some residential within some of those mixed-use buildings. So that 7753 through 7771, I'm pretty sure.
They have apartments above, yeah.
Above that.
Yes, there are.
I don't believe the others have it, but.
And Lake and Thatcher, I think.
Yeah. I just wondered about that. I think the residential might be a separate building.
The Lake and Thatcher, yeah, there's apartments
above.
Upstairs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
You're right.
So just as part of that to consider.
Maybe it's something to think about and discuss at the next meeting rather than, you know, making any kind of decision now or whatever. Definitely the PRI, I think, is a really good idea.
Yeah. And see what we can do on the ideas of the photography and the documenting and the
Yeah, or videoing inside rather than photography.
Yeah, and again, I do think that we could, try to condition some of those things into the delay, some access to do some of those things. Obviously, Dave brings up a good point. I think the property owner is still going to have, some rights there, and I think that there could be safety concerns with some of the buildings, but hard to say on no specific incident.
I like John Schwartz's comments about rating the properties, but that probably would not be part of this project.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, there was talk about Dave Chairman Franek talked about landmarking, and that's the power right there, is the landmark. But I think for this, maybe we just focus on our ordinance changes for the PRIs, the delays. Because we might get, how would we even get the ratings into the ordinance?
I think that you'd have to reissue almost the survey, and the ordinance changes would have to refer to those ratings in the survey somehow. So it'd be a rewrite of the ordinance, but also, some significant editing to the survey.
Ultra significant properties.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, that's just opening up a lot of difficulties, both in terms of time and expense and a whole myriad of other factors that I think would be more counterproductive than productive.
So we should stay away from that for this ordinance, sort of this demo that we're talking about.
I would think so. I think there are, as John Papin mentioned, I think there are some things that we can do, because as part of an applicant's application for a demolition permit, we can make the application process, there's a catch-all in there for such other information as the commission may require in order to make an informed decision. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that's the general concept. And I'm sure we could utilize that for purposes of saying that we want some kind of memorialization of the current interior structure as part of an application for demolition. And doing something like a video is far less labor intensive and consequently less cost intensive than the old fashioned way of having someone do architectural drawings. Asking forgiveness of our two architects on board.
Yes, I agree. There's lots of things there, right now. You can go in there with your 360 degree cameras and take pictures of rooms. I mean, there's just so many easy ways to document today. So, but a very good point.
But we kind of have that kind of baked in already. We just need to use it. Hopefully we don't need to use it because hopefully we're not flooded with any demolition requests, the request for certificate of appropriates for demolition properties. But if in fact one comes up, we can always utilize that as part of our toolbox at the time. So trying to understand where we're headed. Do we want to schedule some kind of public comment on what we just talked about? If so, what do we want to focus that public comment on? And I would propose that it be extending the period of a potential demolition delay on the PRI properties, because I think to include those properties which are even partially residential may cause concerns that would miss the point of what we're talking about, namely potential adaptive reuse of existing large structures as opposed to everything that's not single family residential.
I certainly concur with that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I'd love to know, maybe before being confronted with it in a public forum, I think Scott made the point or asked the question about anybody living in the priory. And I'd love to know, if that's not the case now, when was the last time someone actually lived in the facility? Just because I don't know if that's relevant, but if, I mean, we should probably know.
Mm-hmm. John Pape, do you have any thoughts as to the easiest way to get that information?
I can write to Dominican and see what they say, and we'll start there. I don't necessarily know how it would be relevant, you know, and I suppose that that would be a very unique allowable use potentially in the PRI of residential if it's to serve the purpose of the institution. But my gut tells me that would still be somehow multifamily. So I don't know that that's the case. It could also be a use that was existing non-conforming at the time of that zoning designation. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. But I also, I'm not totally sure how it would be relevant to this discussion, but I can certainly write and find out. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think the question is, what are the currently permissible uses? And that's a function of how the property is currently zoned. It may have been because of the age of the property that the priority a property was used off and on for residential. And in fact, it was grandfathered in because it's short-term or small amount residential use was in fact grandfathered in because it predates zoning in River Forest.
And it could, but if we were talking about a new use that was an adaptive reuse, then that previous existing nonconformity would have to be brought into compliance.
Correct.
But for a zoning amendment, and as we work our way toward a conversation about zoning amendments, you could apply for a zoning amendment for anything, you know, obviously only, you know, ones that the Zoning Board of Appeals deems to be appropriate, reasonable, meeting their requirements would be approved. But, you know, you could always apply for a PRI property to be rezoned. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of different things that are possible.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting question for the purposes of our analysis. I don't know that it answers the essential questions.
Well, and it may be more important to know if those other classifications of properties were being considered too, that the C2s and the C3s that do have apartments in them, if we were adding those and treating them differently than the PRIs, and you had a group of people living in one of the PRIs, I guess it's relevant there. If we're only dealing with the PRIs, it may not be relevant.
You know, I suppose that like the addresses, the properties of like Dominican or Concordia as a whole could be zoned PRI, but could have dormitories on them. You know, that would be zoned differently. But again, that is still different than a residential use in my mind. And in the zoning ordinance.
Well,
I guess going back to that, you know, the charge here would just be is there consensus on what the request is, and we want to move toward the public meeting. That's really the decision point here. If everybody's in a consensus that this is going to be the request, we're going to kind of lock in on that, then, you know, I would ask that everybody kind of charge Chair Franek and I to handle the scheduling of that public meeting and some of the notices, writing some of the notices and letters to take care of that. And again, I'm not looking for a vote, but I'm kind of looking for yays, nays on this.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like from everything I'm hearing that we all would like to go from the 6 month to the 12, just give us more ability to protect these structures.
I think, and we're not talking about the R4s, right?
At this point, we're just talking about PRI.
Just PRI. I mean, I'm fine with consensus on just PRI if everybody wants to go in that direction.
I'm fine with that, too.
I am, too.
Me, too.
Me, too.
I heard yeses from everybody.
Can you describe this next step public meeting?
Yeah, so I think what we would do is we'd look to find a date that gives us plenty of time to get some notice out, you know, something that, you know, gives us, you know, again, if you were doing a public hearing, you'd have to give 15 days notice, and we're not playing by those rules. We're kind of, you know, playing by our own goodwill rules here, but I think we'd want to give people, you know, at least that. If, you know, 30 days would be even better if we can manage to give people enough notice. I will kind of come up with a plan to communicate that. You know, we'll put it in the newsletter. We can put it on social media. We can put it on the website. I think it'd be appropriate to send letters to these PRI properties so that they're all aware of it. You know, I don't know if the commission you know, the commission thinks it's valuable, I can put a notice in the paper. Do those things that are kind of consistent with the public hearing process. But what I would not be doing, I guess, to be clear, is like sending letters to, you know, properties within 500 feet of the affected properties. And I wouldn't send it to all the significant properties. I just, since they're not the affected, I don't know that it's as relevant there.
I think, John, what I would suggest is that as a commission, or on behalf of the commission, you reach out, and I'm happy to join with that, and frankly, any other commissioner wants to, reach out to the village attorney and see what he would advise as to the dissemination of a request for public comment.
Yeah, and I have actually done that, Dave. You know, okay. You just kind of look back at what was done in the 2015-2014 code revision times there, and I think that that's consistent with what I just proposed.
Okay.
At that time, I'd just note for transparency a couple of differences. One, that was to all significant properties, but the code changes was impacting all significant properties, so they were all the affected properties. I don't know that that makes that sense here. And then two, I would note that at the time, the commission called it a public notice, a public meeting, and I'm sorry, a public hearing. And personally, I just think that's a little confusing because that's not really what we're doing. We're having this, you know, a public, you know, we're hearing public comment. We're doing some of those things, but it's not a public hearing by ordinance procedures. That's why I'm just suggesting we call it a public meeting, you know, a special meeting. To you know, to hear any feedback. But when we draft the communication and we draft the letters to these properties, we'll make it, you know, real clear that we're welcoming their feedback. They can attend the meeting. They can submit feedback in writing prior to. They can call me if they have questions. You know, all those sorts of things to again try to get any engagement. Like I said, this is the point: good, bad, or indifferent to hear from people.
I suppose a question, and maybe this is, I certainly don't want to delay the conversation, but what, so when Dominican's president shows up at the public meeting and is furious that this is being considered, is that something the commission should consider beforehand? Or is it just something you accept as a public comment and then you take it from there? Or do we already know they won't be? I don't have any.
I have no idea what the reaction is going to be. I've not pulled anybody on this, you know, other than the seven of us here, right? So a couple of comments there. One, I'd say any of the feedback is going to take on a case-by-case basis depending on what it is. Maybe somebody's going to come with something that we haven't thought of that we were like, well, we do need to consider that. Let's go back to a drawing board meeting like this and then maybe go for another round of public comment. Or maybe some people are just going to say, I'm in favor of this, I'm not in favor of this. And in that case, it's truly more of kind of a building a record of understanding to present to the village board so that it just adds some legitimacy to the recommendation to the board to show the board that the commission's done their homework, accepted public comment. This is what we heard. This is what we can offer on what we think people think about this.
Okay. And to be clear, I wasn't kind of saying we don't do it if there's the thought that the representative of a group is angry at it. I just am curious. And I like the way you just explained that, John, that this is gathering more information for the board to further consider.
Well, not required if you don't do this. The first question from the board is going to be, well, did you ask anybody what they think? You know, so you know that's what they're going to want to know. This is what we're trying to do here, so.
I think one of the questions that goes back, I mentioned this earlier, but I think one of the questions that could be asked is, why are you doing this and why are you doing it now? And if the response is because there's a significant property in the village that we're concerned about its use, I think that's a good answer. I think then a follow-up question is, does any other group like River Forest, segment out these properties in this way. And we should probably be prepared to answer that. And if they don't, why not? And if they do, we're in good company, I suppose. If that makes sense, I may have stumbled over some of that. But if no other entity has any kind of differentiator between our PRI, I guess I don't know enough about this even to know if PRI is commonly used classification in every village or every city unit. But if nobody else separates them out, why doesn't anybody else separate them out? And I'm not asking for an answer. I'm just saying maybe we should be prepared to answer it if someone asks.
Yeah, I'll tell you though, there is a certain inherent complicated part of the comparison thing because it is so tailored to everybody's, you know, unique stock of properties, unique appetite for the balance between historic preservation and property rights, you know. So all of those factors, you know, make some of the towns unique. I think using comparables for like inspiration is useful, but it's just not as easy. Like, you know, like when I think about doing comparables, I think about doing like fee schedules and like, you know, tickets and things. It's like, well, you know, people expect to pay for this here, they expect to pay for it there, but it's more art than science a little bit. So, but yeah, I certainly understand and appreciate that. And, you know, when we go to do that, if anybody has any feedback on that or other, you know, ordinances, we could always make that part of a meeting packet or something, you know, if anybody has research like that they want to share with everybody. Always a good way to do that.
I may be way off base, but looking through this list of the PRIs, it's hard to imagine we're going to get much negative feedback. Just, you know, a lot of these are governmental owned properties and schools and churches. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of feedback we get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It strikes me in terms of looking at other ordinances, having spent a fair amount of time years ago when we were doing this, looking at other ordinances, I think what John said, one of his comments is spot on. And that is, I can't really recall a lot of ordinances that kind of were in lockstep. A lot of them borrowed a concept here, a concept there. Some had their own ideas. Some had were much more protective. Some were much less protective. And as a result, I think a lot of it is very much dependent upon the way the local community views the import of their historic structures and what their concerns are in a given point in time, as opposed to in terms of how you define whether something is important. I think there's kind of universal understanding by going back to the Secretary of the Interior and the federal requirements. But I think beyond that, I think it very much is a local option process in terms of what do the various communities decide. And I'm sure that, you know, River Forest at the end of the day will probably still remain somewhere in the middle, that we won't be as protective as some communities and will be more protective than others. And because we've got, as an example, a number of, you know, we've got two colleges and / universities, and we've got so many religious institutions in our community that for a long time, River Forest's nickname was Saints Rest, because there were just a great multiplicity of religious institutions, about just about every kind of faith and practice you could name. So as a result, we've got per capita a lot more of these structures than many other communities do. Okay. So John, do you think you've heard the consensus that you were seeking in terms of understanding?
Yeah, Yep. The one thing that I was going to add, again, everybody's clear that it's going to be expanding a potential demolition protection for the PRI up to 12 months from the date of the application. Again, is everybody here, or is anybody uncomfortable with the fact that Commissioner Franek and I will work together to draft and finalize the communications for this, and then I'll reach out to schedule the public meeting?
Yeah, I'm more than happy for anyone else to join us if they'd like to.
That's right, so Dave and I will work on that. Again, if the spirit of this was more complicated, I would say let's bring it back and have everybody bless it. But I think it's so simple that we can handle that charge on our own. So we will do that. We'll work on that. Like I said, I think that it's wise to get this settled and handled out first, pick a date that gives us plenty of time, and we'll coordinate that and be in touch first with the commission to make sure everybody can make a date, and then after that, start the noticing process. So.
Does anyone else have anything else they wish to raise as other business?
No.
One note, unless anybody objects, do we, without any other business items pending, do we want to cancel the regular meeting on 2 weeks from now, Thursday the 23rd?
Yes.
I would think yes.
Okay, so I'll cancel that meeting.
Then, having said that, does someone want to propose a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? John?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.